Good morning, everyone. I'm John Huckenberry here with Amy Holmes joining me all week. You know, I'm confused. Wasn't George W. Bush the beer guy, the one everyone wanted to have a beer with? I'm thinking about this meeting later at the White House.
Indeed, and I think that Robert Gibbs, the president's press secretary, though, he sort of gives it all away. Just listen to this.
I think the picture alone will communicate that despite the incident, despite what happened, despite what was said after that, we can still sit down and discuss issues that are important like this, that we can, I think as the president has said many times, disagree without being disagreeable, and I think it'll be a poignant moment.
It's a photo op?
Sounds photo like it.
I have some pictures of me drinking beer in a shoebox somewhere at home. I don't think I would share them.
You wouldn't put them on your Facebook?
No, I would not. Oh, so much to think about in this story. Continuing now with Patrick Henry Bass, Essence senior editor and takeaway contributor. You know, race, beer, two professors, one president, the White House, a cop from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Is there any buzz in the African-American community, and not that you represent everyone, that this is going to actually contribute something here?
I don't know if our numbers are going to go up for Oktoberfest. We're having Oktoberfest in August here. What's surprising and fascinating is the lack of outrage that you hear within the African-American community around, you know, LaFair Gates. Professor Gates is not Rosa Parks. Racial profiling is an extremely, extremely sensitive issue with great historic and systemic challenges.
When you say Professor Gates is not Rosa Parks, what do you mean?
I mean that once the details of what happened, you know, with the arrests, once the details began to spring out in barbershops, I have a barbershop and beauty parlor, you know, and I use that as ground zero for everything that happens in the African-American community.
That's good.
But as details began to spring out, it appeared that there was an overreaction on both sides. And I think what happened with Professor Gates was there was an overestimation of his celebrity. We've seen this before with Cynthia McKinney, you know, in 2006 on Capitol Hill, where she wasn't wearing her lapel pin and she ended up punching an officer in the chest because he didn't recognize her because
that.
He tried to stop her. We had Oprah Winfrey and Gayle King in France at an Hermes store. They were turned away because Hermes said that they thought that they were Northern Africans, and I'm not sure whether Oprah and Gayle were wearing fezes, but you know that they were turned.
In the store, they said they were closed or something.
They said like they were, but it became an international incident and affair. So, you know, someone as recognizable as a billionaire who's watched by hundreds of millions of people around the world can have a moment where, you know, she is turned away or every light doesn't turn green for her that particular day. And for Professor Gates, every light for him didn't turn green that way. Once he stepped outside his house and continued his anger with the police officer, you know, all heck broke loose. And I think more and more African-Americans, once, as well as all Americans, once the details began to spring out, it was understandable Gates' reaction, but it was also understandable Crowley's reaction. Mm.
You want to get Gates's grad students in here to try to ask what they would think of his demeanor. You know, they've probably seen him up close and personal.
So you're saying that Professor Gates, he's not necessarily popular in the African-American community,
I wouldn't say that. I'm saying he may be overestimating his popularity. You know, I think his appearance on CNN and Black America 2, many people were looking forward to part two of Soledad O'Brien and CNN's documentary investigating what it means to be African-American today. And he started it off with the 15-minute live interview with Soledad O'Brien. And it was surprising because many people think that Professor Gates is a historian. He's not. He's a literary critic. And so it was surprising his response. He was stunned that this could happen to him. But he was stunned that this could happen in the United States of America, especially given all of the narratives that would take place on CNN and Black America, too. And I think that then he began to start losing some support within the African-American community because this police racial profiling, police brutality are serious issues. And the challenge for many African-Americans with President Obama is that he was so silent throughout the campaign about issues of race, particularly around Jenna 6. So the one moment that you speak about race after an extraordinary appearance in front of the NAACP,
well, that's
extraordinary
what I wanted to say.
Appearance,
I mean,
it's about Professor
that's what we were
Gates
talking about.
And an incident that everyone didn't fully know the facts.
But does this squander that sense of having settled questions or deeply and emotionally dealt with questions on race at the NAACP convention? Does that squander that we're like having a beer in the backyard?
Well, I think any conversation about race is an important conversation. I just think that this has now lapsed into a photo op. And, you know, is this going to be neatly packaged? package with the weekly news.
Right.
And for many African Americans who have had children who've been murdered by police officers, like the gentleman in Oakland who was murdered by the police, it's, you know, their lives have to go on. It's not about a photo op in a beer, a red stripe, a blue moon.
Well, and Robert Gibbs at the White House said it right at the top of the segment.
It is
going to be a photo op. I wonder if that contributes to any sense that something constructive can happen here.
Sure. Let's bring in Sheila Heen, author of Difficult Conversations and a lecturer on negotiations at Harvard Law School, to weigh in. Sheila, thanks for joining us.
Well, hello.
Hello. So we're talking about this millennial brew, the White House, in Washington, they're calling it the audacity of hop. Is there really an opportunity here for real reconciliation, or is it just really a photo op?
Well, that's one of the challenges in this case, which is I think there is opportunity for reconciliation if they can get a real conversation going. But doing so under the shadow of the media, you know, is hard because it's really two negotiations going on at once. They're obviously negotiating with each other and with the president, as the mediator, by the way. But really, a lot of what's going on is that they're negotiating their own reputations in the broader community. You know, even that night there was an audience, and whenever there's an audience, issues of identity and reactivity and defensiveness, you know, go way up.
Well, that's interesting that you say that President Obama is the mediator. Isn't he actually one of the antagonists, given the press conference last week when he said that the officers had acted stupidly?
Well, that's one of his challenges, which is that as the mediator, of course, as someone who's trying to convene a conversation, the parties want to know, are you neutral? And I think he not intentionally actually tipped his hand in a way that at least the perception is that he's not necessarily neutral. And whether or not he is, which I actually think is one of his greatest gifts, he's really pointing out what's legitimate about two sides to a conflict.
But I have
in this case, you know, he tipped his hand in a way that changes the perception.
But I got to tell you, I'm really skeptical about how much reconciliation can happen when you're sitting there in front of the president of the United States, leader of the free world. What are you really going to say to his face? I mean, I would show up for this invitation if he had Charlie Manson waiting in the waiting room. I mean,
well,
it's just
such
an honor.
I've got to disagree with you there, Amy. Charles Manson.
Well, I mean, you know, what kind of sincerity can we expect when basically if the president beckons, you come?
Right. It's a brouhaha.
Yeah.
Well, Sheila, I mean, I guess what Amy's question is, if there is reconciliation even between these three guys, does it have any relevance to any sort of broader racial reconciliation out in the country? Sheila?
Well, that I think is one of the interesting things, which is I do think that there's an opportunity here. It's just that there's a couple of big hurdles to get there. In other words, if they can actually prepare for this conversation, and I mean Crowley and Gates, in a way that sets them up to be constructive, then there's actually an opportunity for the three of them to do something interesting together. But, you know, it's kind of a long road to get there.
I just want to interject that, you know, when President Clinton was in office, he convened a conversation about race with the esteemed Dr. John Hope Franklin as the moderator, and the media laughed at it. I mean, people looked at it as quite cynical. This was a real probative look at the African-American narrative, our place in American history. That would have made it really good. our contribution to the world. And people cynically laughed at that attempt to do that. This notion of Skip Gates and Crowley reconciling, I didn't understand they had a fallout over something personal, you know. And that, you know, given all the important issues that are taking place right now, like health care and other issues and unemployment, you know, is this the very best way for the president to spend his time?
But I keep circling back, and Sheila, maybe you can answer this. How do you have a candid discussion when the mediator is someone of such dazzling celebrity and power? Do you really have, I mean, will either Crowley or Skip Gates feel like they can be candid?
Well, I think it depends on how they negotiate with themselves ahead of time. In other words, you know, race makes this a particularly hot issue. But I think everybody listening can identify with a situation where you walk into a conversation with someone, you don't expect it to escalate, you don't expect it to be a difficult conversation, and suddenly it's 15 minutes later, the thing has escalated beyond anything you intended. I don't think either Crowley or Gates that evening wanted to be in the center of a media firestorm.
Right. But
the particular trigger for it is related to race, because Skip Gates doesn't know that asking for ID is a standard procedure. I've lived in Cambridge for 10 years. I've had my house robbed. When the cops came, they asked me for ID.
Huh. Well,
now,
I guess we can only hope that this will...
I don't have the question.
Sheila, hold on one second, because we're going to end this segment, but we can only hope that this will escalate to the level of mooning and food fighting. But in fact, you raise a great point. There are challenges ahead. The fact that it's this cast of characters makes it very, very difficult.
Sheila Heen, we don't have time.
We got to leave it there. Sheila Heen is author of Difficult Conversations, a lecturer on negotiations at Harvard Law School, and also Patrick Henry Bass, our friend and Essence senior editor.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.